Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Reverend Don Lewis coming to you from witchschool.com. Are you looking for the best in pagan and magical education? With more than 12,000 pages, witchschool.com is like having your own personal library with individual learning assistants to help you study. And Witchschool's anyone, anytime, anywhere education system is available any place on earth, anywhere you are and anytime you want it, as long as you have an internet connection. Witchschool's lifetime memberships are a great value. They really do last a lifetime. They've been there for years and they'll be there for years to come. So get your membership today at witchschool.com.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.
Good afternoon, or good morning, depending on what part of the world you're in. My name is Matthew Sidney, and you're listening to Walking the Unnamed Path. Unfortunately, today, Michael Gray Wolf, my co-host, is not able to be with us. However, we do have a special guest, Kai Armand, brother and initiate of the Unnamed Path, is going to chat with us today about shamanism. This is the second time we have covered shamanic practice on the podcast, and it's going to be an ongoing thing as we explore each of the four corners or pillars of the Unnamed Path, each of which is extremely complex. We're going to bring brothers on and allow them to share their unique perspectives, their experience, their expertise. The Unnamed Path is very special in that it is a continually evolving, continually revelatory tradition. There's constantly new information coming forth, and we're very excited to share some of that with you today. Kai, you are live on the air with us. How are you doing today?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Kai, first off, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Sure. So I'm Kai Armand. I currently reside and have been residing for quite a while in Brooklyn, New York. I've been an initiate of the Unnamed Path for, let's see, it's 2016. For about 4 years now, although I had been studying with Eddie, founder of the tradition, for a few years before that, I have a background in various magical traditions. I think a lot of people associate me with my work in African-American conjure, also known as hoodoo root work. I'm also an Ungan, and the Ungana Sogwe in Haitian Vodou. And I have some experience in a few other traditions as well. Some more near and dear to my heart than others, but, living in the quote-unquote new world, we are, there's a smorgasbord of things, not just available to us, but sometimes there's a smorgasbord of traditions and spirits sort of just happening to us, and we find a way of incorporating them to our lives and making sense of the medicine that they're here to bring us.
How did you get involved with the Unnamed Path?
So when I heard about the Unnamed Path, I had been spending my late adolescence and early 20s looking a lot at queerness in terms of spirituality. You know, I had grown up evangelical Christian, and after leaving home and sort of needing to sort of expand my own worldview, I spent a lot of years studying, and I really mean, you know, academically studying and doing as much research as I could on groups such as the Radical Fairies, researching gay archetypal psychology from the 1970s and 80s. A lot of my work at a lot of my undergraduate work was spent looking at Walt Whitman and queerness as it shows up in different world mythologies, trying to wrap my head around what queerness has been throughout the ages in different cultures and what my own culture was saying about queerness. So when I stumbled upon a living tradition for men who love men, this was in, I have to say, probably about 2007, 2008, it was really, really exciting for me, you know, having come across, you know, Eddie's Unnamed Path work. And that's where I started listening to his podcasts and really finding, again, not only that it resonated for me, but knowing that all of my work up until then was really leading me to the need for something that was living.
Wonderful. Now, hold on just a moment. It looks like we have our first caller. Let me see if we have a good connection. Caller, you are live on Walking the Unnamed Path. Can you hear us okay? Are you there? Well, I think we're having trouble with that connection. So, caller, I apologize for the technical difficulties. Please continue to listen. And Kai, what was your – this isn't one of the questions I prepared, but it's just coming to my mind. So going through studying the Unnamed Path and then after the year of study going through initiation, was there any change in your perception or understanding of the path itself?
My perception of the path has is constantly evolving. You know, I think I've had a unique relationship with the Unnamed Path in the sense that in the various traditions and cosmologies I belong to, it has never, I don't know if it has ever been my primary upfront path. It has always functioned, in my experience of the Unnamed Path for myself, it has always functioned very much in a behind-the-scenes way. Sometimes it sort of jumps forward and is, you know, the thing that brings the most clarity to the moment. And I actually attribute that in a way a bit to my own initiation in the path. For instance, I'm a priest of the Dark Goddess in the tradition, which if you've covered this in past episodes, she is the Greek Gorgon. She is the sort of, you know, the silent beginning from which all things begin and, you know, to which all things end. And that's a little bit elusive, you know. So in a way, there's a way in which the Unnamed Path has functioned as a lot of, like the background set for a lot of my life. And I keep seeing things that I encounter in the world or in other traditions echoed back. And I say, oh, my God, you know, the Dark God has told me that many years ago, or this is reflecting something about me that I saw.
Right.
While often it is other tools that I'm using most at the front of the stage, other tools from other traditions at the front of the stage. When I initiated into the Unnamed Path, I was in a really rocky place at the time. I was not exactly homeless, but I was experiencing a lot of vagrancy that I didn't really understand why it was happening while I was trying to establish stability. I remember that all my brothers who were studying the tradition before with me, they all initiated before me, and I remember I couldn't go out to make the initiation date, and Eddie really had to calm me down and say, you know, it's just not the time, and I'm sure that you'll do so, you know, at some point, although I was very saddened by it. And it wasn't the time, actually. I actually spent a lot of my time studying the Unnamed Path believing that I was a child of the Light Goddess. And it and that really actually was a conspiracy of the gods, because there was a lot for me to learn from her before I could step into working with the Dark Goddess. And it wasn't for many years before I understood why that really happened on a really deep level. Me experiencing a soul retrieval many years later that was so much related to the Light Goddess's medicine that I realized why I had to be sort of set up with her energy before I could move forward to working with the Dark Goddess. So It was about a year after everyone else in my cohort initiated that I flew out to California and experienced my own initiation with Eddie. And it really, you know, there really is something about right timing. It really did all occur in the right time. And yeah. Exactly what it needed to be. And the year following really was this experience of having a clean, you know, like many initiatory experiences, having a clean slate and really experiencing this being something new.
Right. And I'm glad you brought that up about right timing, because I see that, and not just with Unnamed Path, with I think any initiatory tradition, there we're inclined to put our ego into it. Why is this happening to me? Why is it taking me longer than other people? And it's not, we shouldn't put judgment on it, but just accept that when you're on a spiritual path, there are unseen forces that it's really up to them who are deciding, because they know whether or not you're ready and when you're ready. And I've certainly seen it. Yeah. Now, for the benefit of our callers, the Unnamed Path consists of four paths or pillars, and those are magic and prophecy, which is considered one subject, energy healing, death walking, which has to do with assisting, sort of midwifing the dying, and also carrying messages between the living and the departed. And the fourth is identified as shamanism. Now, of course, there does seem to be some confusion and controversy around the term shamanism. Some people are more comfortable with the expression shamanic practice. That's usually how I phrase it. Kai, I wanted to get your perspective. If we set aside the word shaman and its cultural denotations, how would you describe that fourth pillar of the Unnamed Path tradition?
So I would describe that fourth pillar of the Unnamed Path tradition. It is helpful to view it in relation to the sort of opposite, you know, of the axis, magic and prophecy. Magic and prophecy is sort of, in the Unnamed Path, in my experience, is working on this side of the veil. So working with one of my students in one of my classes uses the term mechanical forms of divination, such as tarot, geomancy, pendulums, working with tools, working with mechanical forms of divination and the use of will to manifest intention on this side of the veil. And shamanic work is both, you know, such as in the shamanic journey, when we actually use a sound vehicle to access non-ordinary reality, to actually go into the spirit world, that's happening on the other side of the veil. And on the other side of the veil, you know, anyone who has experienced shamanic journey work often knows that it is both divinatory in the sense that when you're going into the other, going into non-ordinary reality, you can ascertain information that is not known, but also very much like magic, you can also shift fate. You can also change things that are taking place. I use shamanic journey work as my primary modality for a number of issues that I don't find magic to be necessarily useful for. So to me, shamanic journey, it's not that it is passive, it's that it's taking place on the other side of the veil. And one way of thinking that it also might be that it is more helping spirit dependent. Because when we're traversing non-ordinary reality is too vast and complicated for us to traverse skillfully and safely on our own. So that, you know, that's why when we go into a shamanic journey, the first thing we do is we call in our helping spirit, and we're, from, you know, asking them a question and being led by them through the spirit world to receive the information that we are looking for or to do what we've come here to do, that might not necessarily be a part of everyone's practice when they're engaging magically or when they're using a divination tool.
I see. That's actually, the way you describe it is actually very helpful for me, because I've never really heard it explained quite that way. And I like that. You know, I'm still, if I'm stuttering, it's because the gears in my head are spinning and processing everything. And I like that. I'm definitely going to come away and chew on this mentally a little bit more. Now, you had mentioned soul retrieval, and through my own studies and studies shared with me by other brothers, I know that anthropologists identify soul retrieval as an important feature of shamanic practice in cultures all over the world. For the benefit of our listeners, tell us what that is.
So soul retrieval is pretty much the retrieving, getting back something that has been lost, a piece of oneself that has been left behind due to trauma. And so what is trauma? You know, our culture defines trauma as something that really, really terrible that happens to you that it's hard to get over. The death of a loved one, a car accident, the loss of a home due to fire. You know, we sort of associate trauma with these really, really big, objectively big life events. And that's kind of a problem, actually, because to understand trauma really is anything that at the moment seems bigger than the self is able to deal with or process. And as chronological adults, sure, you know, there are those objective big things, divorce, car accident, et cetera, et cetera. But what we're usually not paying attention to in our own culture is that as a child, everything is traumatic. And really, any time that a child is believes that the people around them who they depend on will stop loving them is traumatic. Because if indeed that parental figure or grandmother stops loving them, then they might stop feeding them and they will die. So trauma isn't just those big crazy things that we're talking about, but for a child, it is when mom said I couldn't take those dance lessons anymore because she didn't think I was good enough. Or when dad was too drunk that night and hit mom. You know, these are the things that we're not really paying attention to that for a child often cause soul loss. And it wouldn't be such an which has led to soul loss being actually an epidemic in our culture. It wouldn't be that big of an issue if we had initiation into adulthood in our culture, but because we don't, we are growing into being chronological adults, still carrying our childhood wounds and still carrying these wounded child emotional bodies and making decisions based on our wounded child emotional bodies, making decisions from a place of, I won't be loved. Going back to, if I'm not loved, I won't get fed and I will die. When we're no longer dependent on people around us. So this is actually something that, I've spent a lot of time in neo-pagan circles and polytheist circles, magical, religious, occult circles, much like, you know, hoodoo conjure root work. And there is a fair understanding of energetic intrusion, spirit intrusion. You know, there's a spirit attached to you that needs to be removed. It's a spirit of the dead. It's a demon, et cetera, et cetera. We have the technologies generally for diagnosing energetic intrusion when something that is foreign to the spirit has latched on to the person and needs to be removed. We have a fair understanding of that. And a fair understanding of how that can cause depression, anxiety, one to make, you know, wayward decisions that don't really serve them, one to experience, sort of possessive things. What we don't and what we really do need to restore to these traditions is an understanding that it's not just about what has gotten into the spirit that needs to be removed, but what has the spirit lost. One of my own teachers says that she has, who's been practicing shamanic healing for over 20 years, says that she's never met an American with less than 3 soul parts missing.
Wow.
So to understand that means that it's almost like thinking that we're running with 2 legs and 2 arms, but really we're running with 1 leg and 1 arm. And to experience an effective soul retrieval means not only having that specific soul part brought back, those specific soul parts brought back, but it also means fully integrating them. I don't have much experience with many shamanic practitioners in terms of soul retrieval. I imagine that some forms of soul retrieval might sort of seem general, sort of like there's a soul part missing and it's brought back. I imagine that that's sort of somehow some people experience or do the work. For me, when I perform soul retrieval and when it's been performed for me, it's always extremely specific. This soul part left when you were 8 years old because it had this experience of the world and said, I'm simply not going to be able to continue moving forward from here on out. And it's not only that this is a big gaping hole in your soul that you have learned to work around this sort of handicap, but it's also that this soul part left with gifts that you no longer have access to. So, for instance, earlier when I was talking about the light goddess and how I was sort of set up to be working with her long before I knew that I was a child of the dark goddess, what revealed to me how important that was many years later, a soul retrieval was performed for me. And what I was told was that the soul part left when I was around 3 years old, and it left because I was saying things to adults that a 3-year-old shouldn't be saying. I was too wise for my age. And really, I needed an elder to say, look, you're coming into the world with these really intense gifts. You're surrounded by adults who are chronological adults, but they're only operating through their childhood wounds. Here's how you're going to maintain these gifts. I didn't have that person. So that part of me said, oh, shit, I'm saying things to people around me, adults, and they're not liking it because I'm too wise for my age. I should shut the fuck up. And that part of me broke off. And that part of me, the shaman who did the soul retrieval for me, called that piece of me the boy with the stars in his eyes. And when I started to integrate the soul part was so connected to astrology, sacred geometry, geomancy, things that I had an interest in, but I could never really breach mentally. There was some part of me, and it was soul loss, that couldn't really make sense of those things. And actually, this piece of me was so unique that I actually had to have a translator helping spirit help me to work with this piece over time toward integrating it. And once I did integrate it, I realized, oh my God, this piece was so vital to my life and so vital to my being and my protection, because if we're talking about pieces of us that are missing, we're talking about gaping holes that allow for spirit intrusion. Once I did integrate this part, I made the connection, oh my God, the light goddess and my work with her early on was trying to make up for this gaping soul loss hole that I didn't have access to at the time.
I see. Wow. So this kind of leads into my next question, which has evolved, because originally I was going to ask, how do you diagnose it? Or, if a lay person, how do I know if I need to see a shaman and ask for soul retrieval? But it sounds like it's an epidemic. So, is it a situation where those of us, and of course we're all scarred in this modern world, should we all be running out and trying to find a practitioner to help us with this, or is there a certain sign that we can look for so that we know when we're ready. How do I know if I should ask a practitioner to help me with this?
So, yes, we all need soul retrieval. Absolutely. If you're growing up in the West today, you need soul retrieval. If you have not integrated all of your soul parts yet, and you know, very, very, very few of us have, I think that I've had something along the lines of, to date, probably at 5 soul retrievals myself. And each of them was not just a, you know, well, here's your soul part back, yay! Each of them required about 2 to 3 months afterwards of me engaging this soul part toward fully integrating them. Because the whole thing about a soul part in our culture, because our culture doesn't have the context in which a soul part would be quickly integrated, this soul part that left when you were 8, when left when you were 9, their concern is, okay, I'll come back, but have you become the adult that made me leave in the first place? Because if you did, I'd rather hang out in the netherworld, hang out with this crow spirit I've been hanging out with, doing this other stuff, because you suck, you know? And that process of integration is taking new actions that are proving to this soul part, no, I'm not that adult. I am a changing, flexible, evolving person who is going to be the adult that you needed when you left,
right?
Not the adult that made you leave in the first place. The risks are that some of us have soul loss due to things that would still be considered as chronological adults very traumatic for us. So a soul part that left because one attempted suicide. This isn't to say that that soul part does not need to be brought back, but bringing back that soul part could trigger some of the same emotions that came up around that time. So with certain soul parts, it is very important to have a support system around you to help you realize and understand what's going on, so that while you're working on integrating the soul part, you can move through that sort of re-triggering process into a full integration. But we're all exhibiting signs of soul loss, some of us more than others. Depression, anxiety, feeling like, you know, I don't really know what I'm here for. I really just, you know, I've lost my sense of soul's purpose. I used to feel like I had a spark in life, and I don't really know what happened to it. I used to be really, really interested in certain hobbies, but I don't do those things anymore. Those things, I just lost my passion for XYZ. Often those things can be traced back. Now, not often consciously we can't do so, but shamanically we can often trace them back to issues of soul loss. So it's an epidemic. There are symptoms of soul loss, such as depression, anxiety, loss of passion and sense of purpose. And yes, even though we all do need it, sometimes there isn't, as we were talking about with initiation, sometimes there is an element of right timing, but it is something that we should be seeking out and considering as a, if not immediate, semi-immediate future option for us to be engaging in, because it is something we all need.
As a practitioner, how does it work? Let's say, for instance, and I'll use myself as an example. I am dedicated to my self-healing. I'm in this process. I've been taking a lot of steps to realign myself with what I consider my life purpose, and I think I'm doing okay with that. I feel very blessed. I feel like I'm in a good place. But if I come to you and say, you know, I want to make sure, I want to check in and see if maybe a soul retrieval needs to be done. How does that work? Do you do a reading for that person, or do you seek out the guidance of the spirits to get insight as to what that person needs?
So for me, soul retrieval showing up as the most acute, immediate thing that needs to happen. Because if someone has a, for instance, a spirit intrusion, then the immediate need is not for a soul retrieval. The immediate need is for that spirit intrusion to be removed. If someone is experiencing, say, chronic, cross conditions, as a term we use in hoodoo, because someone has been throwing witchcraft at them, then the immediate need is for that witchcraft to be removed, for them to get cleansed, their house to get cleansed, that sort of, the immediate need. If someone shows up to me and the immediate need actually is soul loss, a soul retrieval, that can be indicated to me through mechanical divination, such as tarot, or casting of bones, but usually it's indicated to me within the context of me doing a shamanic journey for someone. Oftentimes, I'm in shamanic journey on someone's behalf, investigating their life or a situation in general before I'm made aware, oh, there's a soul part issue. So oftentimes, my experience is I'll be in shamanic journey, I'll be going along with whatever's going on, my helping spirits are showing me this, that, and the other, removing the person's energy body. And then I sort of say, it looks like there's this piece. And the next thing I know, I'm in that person's life, age, such and such a time. And I'll know immediately just from how the journey shifts, okay, we're moving into a soul retrieval right now. Because it's almost like a 7-year-old child, a 12-year-old child has been just dropped in my lap. And I have to start engaging with them. I actually have a helping spirit who usually does the work of catching the soul part and keeping them safe while I get to ask them these questions and figure out what's needed for them to feel safe enough coming back. And sometimes what's needed is already present in the person's life. I performed a soul retrieval as part of a larger shamanic journey a couple of weeks ago, and the soul part left because the mother had been very discouraging about her moving into the entertainment business at that time in her life, even though she was so effervescent and big and beautiful. And just upon hearing that the adult that she had become was indeed an actress, the soul part ran into her arms and said, awesome, let's do this. But I've had other soul parts that have really required some negotiating. I'm really, fighting for this adult and having to convince this child that this adult is going to work with them to fully integrate them and is not going to be, again, that adult who made them leave in the first part. I've also had, so 99% of the time, I'm in shamanic journey, I have no idea what's going to happen, and the soul part is showing up as part of a larger conversation of shifting energies and clearing energies. And I don't know when it's going to happen or if it's going to happen, because it might not be what my spirits see as most acutely needed in that person's life. However, I have, in that other 1% of times, been doing a mediumship session. I call them sort of soul guide consultations, where I'm looking at the 4 or 5 helping spirits that are closest to a person, that are not working with someone just because when they were 15, they kind of liked the idea of Kernanus and set up an altar to them, but the spirits that when you incarnated said, awesome, love this idea, you're going to do this, this, and this in the world, count me in, I've got your back, we're going to do it, it's going to be awesome. I'm most excited about those spirits that are walking with someone innately. And that other 1% of times with soul retrieval is I'll be doing that mediumship session, and one of those spirits will say, by the way, when you were 4, you lost this soul part, here you go. And that's always very strange for me because I'm not deep in trance. I'm in sort of a light channeling trance, yet still this spirit is literally just shoving me the soul part saying, okay, I'm done with it. It would be great if you had this back now.
But
it's just me putting it in the person's energy body and then me giving them, the PDF I have for them to begin integrating that soul part. And then we're going to have a follow-up call in about 2 or 3 weeks to make sure that things are going right.
Are you taking clients?
I am, actually. I I have a practice impact shamanism. There's a cover page up right now with mailing list, but my goal is that before the end of the day, the whole website will be up. By the end of the day, today is Saturday, November 12th. My goal is that before the end of the day, the full website will be up. I just transitioned. I maintained a practice inspired by Eddie and actually a reading that I had with him many years ago, Conjuring the City, for many years. Eddie was not just someone who initiated me into the Unnamed Path, but he was my primary mentor when it came to Southern root work. But as my own life and process kept moving forward, I realized that as much as I love magic and conjure, so often what I found people needing was soul retrieval or ancestral healing. So Conjuring the City is something that I just closed down about 2 months ago, and sort of been going to my spirit saying, what's next? And I got the vision for impact shamanism. And of course, we have the vision, but then there's a time between the vision and the manifestation, which for us is generally copy, PayPal, all of those things.
Right.
So I've been working on those, but today my hope is that it will finally be up. But I do have a practice. It is impactshamanism.com, and at the very least, someone can go there and sign up for my mailing list to receive the launch date, which should be today. If not today, probably tomorrow. But it is work that I'm strongly committed to and that I'm excited about because, I guess I've always been most excited about people in the occult and magical communities because even if we don't necessarily have all of the tools that we need working within our Western paradigm, we're already sort of showing a certain excitement about the world. We're already taking our will into our own hands and doing the best that we can. We're already investigating deeply in non-ordinary reality states. We're already experiencing suspension of disbelief and saying, no, I know such and such a spirit showed up last night. And that to me is exciting. And part of impact shamanism is a shamanic practice that's open to anyone who feels the need for shamanic healing or shamanic divination, but it's especially geared toward people who either consider themselves creatives, leaders, or visionaries. Because those are
okay.
often the people who are coming into our world with gifts and our culture. You know, it's almost like the more gifts you're bringing or the more wild and cool your vision is, the more our culture wants to beat it out of you. You know, versus many indigenous cultures that say, oh, my God, you're showing up with these radical gifts. This is so important. We need you so bad. We're going to sing protection songs while you're in the womb to make sure
right.
that you are right, you great messenger, with these gifts that we need versus our meat grind culture. I suppose like every day since I got the vision for impact shamanism, I keep hearing about artists and the people with non-normative ideas and innovative ideas for our culture dying, committing suicide, saying I'm all alone and I know that there's no way out, and experiencing so fully and subjectively true for themselves that their gifts that they brought into this lifetime are a curse, when it's the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And they need more than anyone help to maintain, nourish, and nurture that those gifts, that non-normative way of seeing, so that they can do what they've come here to do in this world for all of us.
Yeah, I totally see what you're saying. I've lived it.
Right?
I'm excited. So, first of all, you have made a sale. I am totally signing up for Impact Shamanism because I'm just very amazed by everything you're talking about, and I'm very excited. And I'm going in two different directions, which is not surprising given that I'm a Gemini. Do you ever work with people remotely, or do you need to work with people in person?
99% of my work is remote. Usually when I do shamanic healing sessions, I have a short intake where I just want to hear from someone their own experience and where they are and what has led them to this moment. Then I usually use privately a couple of forms of mechanical divination just to orient myself in terms of the questions it best serves me to ask when I enter into a journey. And then what happens is while I'm in shamanic journey, I record it. I actually narrate the story out loud. I narrate the experience I'm having in non-ordinary reality. And I end up emailing that recording to the client. So that person ends up having an MP3 recording of me sort of backstage of their life with my helping spirits, moving things around, retrieving energies, talking to ancestors of theirs, all very, very specific stuff. And my experience of it is once they listen to it, you're going to listen to it again in a week and maybe a week after that because they're so rich. It's not that they're rich mm-hmm. in terms of too complicated to understand, but it's almost this experience of, wow, this is a summing up of my life into this point. And they're so deep. Once you start taking action on them, when you hear them again, hear the session again in a week or two, you're going to hear things that you didn't hear before. Right. To me, it's not just about having the shamanic healing session done, but it's about skillfully mining it for everything it's worth.
Right.
I had an effective shamanic healing session done for me where 6 months later, I'm still mining it because there's still more in there for me to engage with. You know, the spirit world is actually very, it's very good at managing energy. So it's not saying that spirits won't repeat energy, but it's sort of this excitement like, oh, yeah, someone's moving on this person's behalf and wanting to look at these underlying issues. Great. Let's get it all done. Let's get as much done as possible in this 30-minute to one-hour span of time. That's really going to be like this speed pellet for someone if they mine it for all the gold it's worth. It's really going to be the speed pellet for someone where they're going to really, you know, sort of jump over all of these hurdles and patterns that they really didn't know why they kept running into the same kind of person in their relationship issues, why they kept having the same anxiety, why they kept having the same experience in their career. So to answer your question, yes, the vast majority of the work I do is remote, but ongoing communication via email, via follow-up calls is highly suggested because, again, there's that piece about not just having the session, but about being able to skillfully mine it for
right.
new actions to take moving forward.
Can we perform soul retrieval for the collective soul of the United States?
You know, that's so real. That's so real. And I've been exploring a lot of thoughts around things like that. You know, Sandra Ingerman, I haven't listened to or read too much of her stuff, but she seems like she's been doing some work and in that direction.
Yes.
Talking to people about retrieving soul parts for spaces and places. I was led to land issues because they were coming up constantly in my own life. I set up an office near my home that I really loved, and I found that it was being intruded upon by a lot of different land spirits that weren't healthy, and I didn't understand why. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, that which becomes a medicine in our toolbox started off as a poison. and that's absolutely the case for me when it comes to sort of land and geography. And what I had found is that even though I have not performed soul retrieval for a landmass or an institution like in the United States, I have done a lot of sort of energetic healing for land spirits and the like. And one of the things that, the United States is suffering from the same things that we are suffering from as individuals, which is that the trauma that has happened has not been acknowledged, witnessed, and resolved.
Exactly. Can you hold that thought? Because we have a caller.
Of course.
And I want to give them a chance. Hi, caller. You are live on Walking the Unnamed Path. Who's with us?
And me.
Hi. Can you please introduce yourself and tell us where you're calling from?
You talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, wow. I didn't mean to hit the button. I'm just enjoying the show.
Okay. All right. Well, please keep listening. And you're welcome if you have any questions, or you can use the chat or PM me on Facebook if there's anything you want me to ask Kai while we're on the air.
Is this the Walking Unnamed Path show, right?
It is, yes.
I've heard you guys do a show once before, and I did have a question the first time I listened in, but I cannot remember what it is now. My brain just went...
All right, well, listen, why don't you sit back? Do you want to think about it? Sit back. We're in the middle of talking about soul retrieval, and we've shifted into soul retrieval for institutions and places, and... I'll check in with you. Stay on the line. I'm going to put you on hold, but then I'll check in with you a little bit.
Okay, thank you.
Kai, so you had talked about doing, I think you were talking about energy healing for spaces and institutions. I think that was where we left off.
Yes, yeah. And one of the things that I've even been reading about in, various journalists have been pointing out is, it's not that the increase in hate crimes that we're seeing since Donald Trump's election are a new racism. It's that over the past 50 years, there's been a veneer of niceness over the racism and misogyny and I'm not going to call it nativism because nativism would actually be celebrating the original inhabitants of this continent, but really white supremacy. There's been this clean veneer, and everyone's so worried and saying, oh, my God, now that veneer of niceness is gone. But that's energy. That's how it works, is that there's nothing – our shadows are too big to stay in our closet.
We can't fix it until we face it, and we're not going to get
exactly.
Past it.
Exactly. And us so many people are saying, well, he's just saying what I'm thinking and what we've been thinking, and the question is, well, why are we thinking that? We have an epidemic of and the thing is that this trauma is in the land, this trauma is in our bodies, this trauma is also in our dead. We don't have a culture that tends the gates of death well. So we have we might be a new generation, but there are tons of extremely racist people who died and extremely misogynist people who died who are still here. These dead need to be moved on. A couple of stories. I know that for me, I had a weird intrusion issue in my own space for a while that I couldn't understand because none of the tools I use for moving on dead people, there are certain herbs and minerals and practices that are very good for trapping or moving on wayward ghosts, but none of those were working. And I finally had to sort of say, if this spirit, which was a sort of a female spirit, the spirit of an indigenous woman, was not a dead woman, well, then what is she? And I couldn't figure it out. And it took me a while to realize that in many indigenous cultures, when you die, you become the land. And what it was the reason why I couldn't move her on was she was an unresolved dead spirit, but she was a land spirit at the same time. And I have an altar to Santa Muerte, the sort of Mexican holy death. And what I saw was the spirit sort of in front of Santa Muerte's altar praying for the demise of Western civilization. And when I recognized that I wouldn't be able to deal with this spirit as a dead woman, I had to deal with her as a land spirit, I had to do something that kind of looked like soul retrieval. I had to actually ask her, what's going on? Where is the original trauma? And the acute trauma for her was that colonists had, and, you know, I'm living in New York, I'm living in Brooklyn.
Right.
So in 1600s, 1700s, early colonists had taken her baby away. And that, you know, was the sort of acute trauma. But the older trauma was that when she was a little girl, she had seen way out on Long Island fires being set to American Indian villages, and she went to her mother and said, what the fuck is going on? And her mother didn't have answers for her, didn't have answers for this suddenly changing world, and kind of just said, you know, be quiet, we're going to do our best. And that was the early trauma. So in a way, that was a soul retrieval that took place for that land spirit. One of my, I belong to another shamanic community, actually called the Last Mask community. It's led by Christina Pratt in Oregon. And she tells a story of how an emotional clearing practice that she teaches, there was a group in Colorado that kept wanting her to come and teach it there. And year after year, there would be all these people who would sign up. And as it got closer to the workshop date, everyone would drop out. And the people who wanted her to come, she said, well, you're going to have to investigate why this is happening. And when they went to investigate, what they saw was that a you know, a couple of hundred years ago, there was a chief who, in seeing that there were going to be colonists and armed forces invading the land of his people, he set up a curse to stop them. And
of course.
And unfortunately, he died before that curse could be dismantled.
Right.
And that curse has still been reverberating throughout the land in Colorado ever since. And The full story of that, one can hear it on whyshamanismnow.com. If one does a search for land spirits, you'll come across the episode that talks about it. One of the things that Christina says when she's talking about the episode is, has anyone been to Colorado? It's so beautiful there. There is no reason for anyone to be shooting anyone in Colorado. But there's this trauma in the land that needs to be resolved. And I think about all of the lynchings, all of the abuse throughout America, that, you know, the massacres. This is all unresolved trauma in the land that needs to be resolved if we want to make America great to begin with.
Right. Right. I'm so glad that you're talking about this stuff, because this is really resonating with a lot of information that's been coming up in my work and in my practice. And I'm very much new to all this. I'm very much a baby. And what you're sharing with me is so affirming. And also, not only that, but also gives me hope that there are positive things that we can do to help create the collective health and the collective harmony that we so desperately need.
Yeah, it's these are daunting times. I'm as, you know, sad as many people are. It's we've just elected someone whose words, you know, are very much in alignment with fascism, and we've seen how that has played out in, you know, around the world. And
I'm sorry, go ahead, finish.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, you know, and if we ask why us, the evidence is there. The evidence is all around us. But we really need to be taking actions that we need to be taking actions in the invisible world, in our own lives, and in, you know, when it comes to the land and the people that are, you know, have lived here on the land. I think that a lot of the root causes are there.
Yeah. Is there something, maybe a practice or an approach or an exercise that you can share with our listeners, something that's appropriate for people who are new to spiritual practice to kind of help strengthen them spiritually at this point in time, at this crossroads where we find ourselves?
Sure, there are a couple of things that come to mind. For sort of new spiritual practitioners, one would be that we really do stand on the shoulders of giants. There are people who accomplished amazing things, were truly resilient without many of the tools that we've been discussing during our show, and to me, you know, they're kind of miraculous, just considering how daunting things can be. But, you know, they too stood on the shoulder of giants and were inspired by people who came before them and their contemporaries. So I'm big on ancestor practice, not just on personal ancestors. In fact, I have a lot of caveats around working with personal ancestors. For instance, I don't work with all of my ancestors. Many of my ancestors are what I would consider to be unresolved. Many of our ancestors are unresolved. They are not healthy. They are not wise. They are not able to bring the wisdom of their lives to bear in our life because they have not yet moved on. And that's a much larger conversation. I make a delineation by calling on my ancestral helping spirits who lived well and died well. I only want those ancestors of mine who actually did cross over and have come back as ancestral helping spirits, not the ones who never crossed over and are still, you know, ghosts remaining in their biases. But in this moment, I'm actually more talking about the ancestors of humanity, those ancestors who made really incredible impacts on humanity, and the legacy that they left go on to show that. I keep coming back to Harriet Tubman, you know, this woman who began as a, you know, collective of souls from before birth and said, hey, I'm going to go to Earth and we're going to pull this thing off. It's going to be crazy. I'm going to incarnate as an enslaved black woman in Maryland, but I'm going to free these people. It's going to be crazy. And some of the spirits around her probably said, you're nuts. It'll never work. And some of her spirits said, oh, my God, we totally got you. It's going to be so bomb. Can't believe it. No one's going to believe it. It's going to be the best thing ever. And she came in despite hardship that we can't even fathom. Did what she did. There's a statue of her in West Africa. You know, like that, you know, that level of legacy that has been left behind. And I do think we need to call upon the strength and resilience, and they mean it very, very directly. I don't mean just symbolically thinking of. I think we need to put up pictures and sort of have the ancestors of humanity. Shrine, virtual or personal, or own homes.
Yeah.
You,
oh, I love
that,
it.
You that met the challenges of your time, help
right.
us to meet the challenges of our time. Who are those ancestors of humanity who we know have moved on and have come back as ancestral helping spirits because we need them more than ever if we're going to not save our planet, but save our own asses, because the planet's going to be fine.
Right.
It's whether or
yeah.
not we're going to
be fine. Fine.
It's the other
true.
Piece I would consider is there's it's not exactly soul retrieval, but it's related in the sense of it being one of the foremost modalities I know of in terms of efficacy for resolving trauma, and it is alternately called focusing. It's also known as inner relationship focusing. It's also known as emotional clearing. And what it is,
okay.
is it's the process of being with triggers that show up in the body. Because the whole thing about trauma is it seems invisible, but it's not invisible. It shows up in our bodies when we're triggered by that person at work. And why does that, you know, why do people always say that to me? Or why did that person cut me off in the road? I just get so angry. And if we were to really be with that anger, we're noticing, oh, wow, this anger is in my throat. It's feeling like this heat in my throat. Langston Kahn of occupy-your-heart.com has an incredible emotional clearing practice where he can really work with someone to be present to that trigger and trace that trigger, much like a soul retrieval, back to the earliest time it happened, often in childhood, often to an early trauma then. But even if someone is wanting to simply engage the process on their own, it's really the process of being with trauma as it shows up in the body, being with trauma as it shows up in a circumstance. We're often so fiery and young-oriented. We need to change this. We need to fix this. But so often what trauma needs is a witness. It needs someone to simply be with it and hold it without judgment. And, you know, even in Eastern traditions, and the wisdom of Eastern traditions, that simply being with, without judgment, but witnessing, allows that trauma to all of a sudden open up into a new possibility.
Wow. Wow. Well, we have two callers on the line. I think they're just listening, but I do want to give them a chance to ask questions if they have any. So I'm going to bring one of our callers on the line. And you are live on Walking the Unnamed Path, and I know you called in the middle. Are you? Did you remember what your question was?
Yes, and you touched on it a little bit. And I was going to ask you, do you believe in ancestral crossover? And and the second part to that was, I know a lot of people that walk the spiritual path believe in reincarnation. And do you believe that sometimes we, for specific purposes, cross over when we incarnate to help out the opposite of what we originally were?
So I guess I'm sensing two questions. Do I believe in reincarnation and sort of a certain choice regarding reincarnation to maybe experience things that we didn't experience before? And the piece about ancestral crossover, could you explain that a bit?
I've noticed throughout the years that some people, when they are trying to choose their pantheon, some of them only stick with what's familiar, and other people will try pantheons across the board to see what fits. That's where I was coming from with that. Have you seen people, you know, relate to pantheons that aren't specific to certain parts of the world where they're live ancestors might have come from?
This is Matthew. I'm going to try to take that. It looks like Kai dropped off. Hopefully, actually, maybe he just dropped back in. Let's see.
Hey,
Kai,
I did get cut off for a second. But please, you should absolutely respond.
Personally, yes, I do believe in reincarnation, but it's complicated. My personal belief about the way it works is constantly evolving, and what we're taught in the Unnamed Path is unique. And I would refer you to the original podcast series by Hyperion for context on that, because I think he explains it best.
Okay.
My understanding is still evolving. So I believe that definitely there is a form of reincarnation, but I'm still learning how it works, and I'm still learning how things operate on the other side.
Right. That's
and
cool.
That's me personally. And as far as Pantheons, I do think that we come into this world with pieces of people who've been here before. And I think that we come into this world, and sometimes we come into this world and we have a strong affinity for the traditions of the family that we were born into. But I think sometimes we have these unexplainable affinities for something else.
Right.
In my case, as a very, very small child, I've always just had this attraction, fascination for Egyptian culture and also for Greek. And because of that, you know, as from the time I was 8, 9, 10, throughout my teenage years, I was very interested in not only Greek and Egyptian mythology, but also their spiritual beliefs and their culture and learning about their worldview and their civilizations, because it felt like home to me. So does that mean that, you know, I lived a life in Alexandria or that I lived a life in ancient Athens? Possibly. Or maybe for whatever reason in my spiritual makeup, there's just bits and pieces of that memory that somehow got coded into the being that I am in this life. And I'm not sure how the mechanics of that work. For me, I believe that we should follow those affinities. If you feel drawn to something, it might have to do with reincarnation, but it might also have to do with a spirit guide. Perhaps one of the spirits walking with you was a druid. And you might be thinking, well, why do I have this obsession with druidism? You know, I'm not Irish and all of this, and it's so weird, you know, but I have this affinity. But it could be that there's a spirit guide who understands that language, understands that cultural symbolism, and is trying to use it to communicate with you and wants you to learn a little bit about that language so that that guide can help communicate with you more clearly.
Awesome.
And then, Kai, I think you certainly have more experience than I do. What are your thoughts?
I totally agree with you. I think one of the things we struggle with in terms of understanding reincarnation in the West is we have a singular concept of the soul. And almost no other culture has that. You know, if you go into almost any other culture, the idea is that the soul is made up of many souls, many parts, that we are actually each a culmination and an amalgamation of many souls, possibly from, you know, some of it which are coming from our ancestral line, some of which are coming from different cultures. It's almost like how, you know, rain falls from a cloud and then, you know, through evaporation it goes back up. But then new raindrops from, and you know, that one raindrop that comes down could have been, you know, a billion, you know, could hold in it a billion raindrops from, you know, its previous incarnation as a raindrop. So I would definitely, I think that's where we usually get stuck, because we think to ourselves, you know, everyone was Cleopatra in a life, past lifetime. That doesn't make any sense. So, you know, therefore reincarnation isn't true, when actually Cleopatra probably is in about, you know, 9 million people, you know, some piece of her, you know, 9 million people can trace back to that story and that life that was lived. Affinities is definitely one great way of talking about it too, Matt, because I am someone who has really interesting affinities. I feel they echo very hugely for me when I travel, because there are so many places in the world that just feel so much like home, and I don't know why, but I just, you know, there's, you know, certain places in the world, certain cultural, you know, symbols or practices. So yeah, I definitely do believe in reincarnation, but then there is an element that sometimes a helping spirit from a culture that, you know, we might not fully identify with in this lifetime is in our lives, and they're the ones who are nudging us, you know, with their own proclivities. But so often those helping spirits are there because we might have worked with them in a past lifetime. So really, it's just all so cool and far more interesting than we'll ever understand.
That was beautifully explained. I'm enjoying the show. I will recommend people to listen in. Do you guys do this on a regular on a Saturday?
We do this the second and fourth Saturday of every month? We do it twice a month. And,
okay.
Yeah, I apologize. My brain is not I'm not running on all cylinders. I think it's the second
okay.
and fourth Saturday of every month. And all the episodes are archived. So if you go to Pagan Tonight Radio website, we're there in the archive with all the episodes. So if you miss an episode, you can always go back and listen to it. Michael and I are working on compiling a list of Walking in Path episodes and posting that somewhere in a central location for everyone's convenience.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, I thank you so much for calling in, because that makes the show so much more exciting. And, part of the reason why, Michael and I put this together and with the support of the rest of the brothers is we're really here to serve you. We're here to serve the community, and we're trying to nourish each other spiritually and give each other what you need. So,
right.
Any feedback that you can give us, you can find me on Facebook, private message me. You can email us, with any questions or any requests, and we're listening.
Yeah, my name is Ed. I'm Mystical Carter. Love from Virginia. And you can find me on Ed Mystical Carter on Twitter. And you were spot on, because I resonated with what you said about, sometimes we're born with bits and pieces of different cultures and it's a learning experience. And some people totally ignore that part of the learning experience, because whether some people like it or not, we're not that far different, and we're very closely related to each other. And my personal belief is that if you go through, I'll put it like this, like if you go through a very isolated life and you end up coming back, I think you you come back to experience it from somebody else's point of view, to gain a better understanding of the way different people live and prosper and fail on this planet. I think this planet is a one giant classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And we come back to have different experiences until we opt out.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I agree with you.
But I'm not gonna take up too much of your time. Thank you for taking my call, and you guys have a wonderful show.
Okay. Ed, thanks
for calling
much.
In.
Have a beautiful weekend. Hi, we have a question for you. What is your website?
So I had a practice. My personal practice is impactshamanism.com. Right now there's a mailing list up, but by the end of the day, the full website should be up, impactshamanism.com. And that is sort of my personal practice that's mostly geared towards shamanic healing. The other practice that I'm involved in as a magical practitioner, for those who might be seeking work of candle setting or mojo hands or divination, sort of regarding, the mundane aspects of life, that website is greenwoodconjure.com. And again, that's another one where the mailing list is up, but the website should be up within the next couple of days. And both have Facebook pages as well, if someone wants to be updated through those.
Okay, great. So impactshamanism.com for your shamanic practice, greenwoodconjure.com for the more magical related practice, and it's going to be a couple of days before those are fully up and running, but people can also look for Impact Shamanism and Greenwood Conjure on Facebook?
Yes, those are thoroughly updated, and we'll definitely, when the websites are fully up, those will be up there as well.
Cool. Excellent. We did have another
caller who I think is just listening, but I'm gonna unmute him just in case he has any questions. I know you've been with us since the beginning of the show. If you do have any questions, you are live in case you want to chat with us a little bit before we close out the show. Unfortunately, I hear a little static on the line, but I can't hear you speaking. I don't know if it's maybe it's the connection, so I apologize for that. If you want, feel free to message me, Matthew Sidney, on Facebook, if you have any questions or any input about the show. And in the meantime, Kai.
Hey there.
There are – I'm going through my sheet. I'm trying to find my place in my list of what I thought were intelligent questions. There are of course, folks who are skeptical or even critical of people in modern cultures who engage in shamanic practice or identify as shamanic practice. What would your response be to them?
Oh, I usually don't respond. because the,
all right, good answer.
Yeah, I usually don't respond because I'm so busy doing work to try and convince anyone who is attached to a very, very recent Western objectivism. You know, it's a very recent idea, scientific, it's not about science being opposed to shamanism, but we're talking about scientism, scientific materialism. There are so many things that science is constantly affirming what indigenous people have known forever, and saying, oh my God, everything is energy. Who knew, you know, while being unable to explain very basic things that aren't basic at all, but basic things that indigenous people have been exploring for ages, such as, well, where is consciousness? Where is it located in the body? It's not located in the brain because the heart has feelings, and, you know, sometimes we experience consciousness there. So, you know, where is consciousness? You know, science is wonderful for what it can't explain, but it can't explain everything. And I can't, Lord knows, I can't explain everything. The whole thing is that it's such an incredible mystery, this gift that we've been given of consciousness, of the Earth's great dreaming, and our job is to tend it well, to tend it to the best of our ability. I'm grateful that I'm generally too busy to engage skeptics who want to derail, you know, work, especially when the answer is so on, it's on the tip of their nose. You know, to me,
right.
You know, just an experience of beauty is so beyond, you know, whoa, neurons and synapses go firing. There's so much more. Our world is ensouled. And if that's too scary for you, well, then I hope you find what you need.
Right. And before we close out the show, do you have any particular message or announcements or anything special that you would like to share with our listeners?
I was told
take
something
as much
by
time
helping
as you want.
Oh, thanks. I was told something by a helping spirit many years ago, sometimes hard to swallow, but it's, I think, a very important capital T truth, and it's something that I had to keep coming back to all the time, and it's that the monsters outside of us are the monsters within us. The things that we're seeing in the world are, you know, if we are go about attacking them outside of us, then we are simply ignoring how they are a mirror for the inside of us and for the stuff that we haven't dealt with. I do believe in direct action. I do believe that things need to be protested and people need to be held accountable for the things that they've said and done and say that they will do. I also believe that at the same time, we need to hold ourselves accountable for the work that we know we need to do, but keep saying we'll leave it for tomorrow, or keep believing that that's not enough, you know, or that's not important enough, or, well, I'm not a big enough leader for that to really matter. We're leaders in our own lives. The work that we do for self-healing matters. Every little percent of work that we do to heal ourselves, to resolve the trauma in our own lives, to step into alignment with our own purpose, to do more of who what we've come here to do and be more of who we've come to be, every percent of that matters.
Yes. Yeah. Kai, thank you so much for your time and your expertise. And after the show's over, I'm going to be stalking you and calling you, and because I want to learn more from you, and I'll try not to be creepy.
Be creepy all the time. Message me on Facebook all the time.
And I want to thank all of our listeners, and I want to thank all the brothers of the Unnamed Path for supporting this project. I'm very excited about it. I'm very excited about connecting with the community and with the world and sharing what we're doing, because I really believe it's important. And everyone, please enjoy the rest of your weekend. Be safe, be blessed. And until next time, this is Matthew Sidney, and you are listening to Walking the Unnamed Path.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
You're listening to Pagans Tonight. Pagans unite on Pagans Tonight. Many paths, one network. For over 5 years, we've been the place to connect with the best, brightest, and most trusted voices in the pagan world. Every night is Pagans Tonight.